Good evening, welcome to Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra and the original FM stations of the GBC and at gbcghana.com. My name is Abraham Asari. In tonight's edition, doctors back to the consulting rooms. What would be the impact on the resolution of their problems? And Accra once again hit by floods with devastating effects. Why has the flooding situation in Accra defied solution for years? Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra. The text line for tonight's program is 026-441-8767. 026-441-8767. Well, dying patients must be heaving a big sigh of relief following the news that the striking doctors have at an emergency meeting today decided to go back to the consulting rooms. A statement signed by the President of GMA, Dr. Adum Winfo, and the General Secretary, Dr. Soji Sojitete, said the decision follows today's devastating floods in the capital and the consequent repercussions on the lives of the people, as well as the numerous calls and appeals by civil society groups, organizations in the entire Ghanaian populace on the doctors to suspend their strike. We are trying to get the signatories to that statement, Dr. Adum Winfo and Dr. Soji Sojitete. We are unable to do that yet, but when we do, we'll be speaking to them. But first, Minister of Health, Joseph Yelechiri, is on the line now. Good evening to you, Mr. Yelechiri. Welcome to Radio Ghana tonight. I'm sure that you are heaving a huge sigh of relief.
Thank you very much, and let me also extend greetings to the cherished listeners who listen to you every evening. Yes, indeed, government is, as you always indicate, relieved that the doctors have called off the strike in compliance with what is required patient, and also the reason. We as government are very grateful to the various opinion leaders, political leaders, religious and traditional rulers who have made incessant calls on the doctors to call off the strike. Indeed, we commend them and those other agencies, particularly the ones who stood in to take care of the emergencies. Again, we are extremely grateful for. Now, what is also relieving is that in the light of this disaster that struck Accra and other places, it is only appropriate that we again commend the doctors for what they have done. What we will urge them to do is to face up to this compulsory negotiation with in good faith. We continue to give the support that we need to give to the agencies involved in the negotiation. What is important also is for everybody to know that as a democratic rule of law, every citizen should abide by the law. The strike was unfortunate, as we have always indicated, and as the president said, he appealed to them to go back and that is taking on. So once again, we are happy this has happened.
So you're referring to the fact that everybody should obey the law. Which aspects of the law were violated in this whole brouhaha?
Well, first of all, as we, once the law is there, classifying essential services and for people not to go on strike, it is for a reason. Of course, the doctors also claim that the agencies that they are negotiating with were not doing things as quickly as they should. But I can't say we are exercising democracy, we want the rule of law to exist. Parliament passed the Labour Commission. Parliament passed the law to establish the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission. And these are the strong institutions that we must be building. Rather, people always want us to do to call people aside for convenience by institutions or by, instead of going by the laid down procedure. The argument we have raised is that there has always been the channels for resolving this problem. If you want to resolve it outside the law, then you are indicating to the rest of the people that the institutions, we are not building them, we are not
But
many people have about trust in the institutions. It's important. But it is only when we build strong institutions and point out their weaknesses and strengthen those weaknesses that we can have a peaceful society.
But when these institutions don't seem to be working, people will violate the law.
First of all, that is what is important for all of us to notice. As if everybody thinks that I'm entitled to something and must take the law into your hands to get that thing, then of course we are in a chaotic society. What we all need to do is that, long as it may be to take a decision, long as it is for us to be able to do anything for a group of people who deserve what they deserve, you cannot move through this thing faster than is permitted by the procedures. Aside procedures, if you want to set aside regulations, and then look at emotions as the case for many people who are talking on this matter, it will not resolve the matter. We have difficult times in this country, and what is important for us is to be able to restrain ourselves and follow the law.
And I'm sure you admit that maybe some officials on the side of government also used, you know, emotional sentiments to react to the action by the doctors.
That's why I'm saying they all, at one point, when the media, they were calling me and wanting me to make a statement, I said, no. What is important is that let's follow the law. They left permission, they asking everybody not to talk on this topic, but everybody to talk. Of course, people who were suffering, the people who were dying, people who were concerned about the loss of the lives of their relatives, they were emotional. There were government agencies which have also made comments. But all these things, as I'm saying, they don't help to resolve the matter. Yes. And for, as I said, I'm always appealing to the GMA that when you go to a negotiation table, the negotiation table, that must be agreed upon.
So
you need to move steps and get the thing going.
No, I'm sorry, sir.
Cool head, not an intemperate language, not insults, or not put beating their chest and said we have won or we have lost.
And I'm sure that this advice will also go to your officials also, or people at the ministry, because the doctors they've constantly referred to a statement made by your deputy asking them to resign if they couldn't take what was being offered. And I think that one also somehow contributed to aggravating the problem.
Yes, as I'm saying that, of course, there are unfortunate statements that were made by various people, including sometimes government officials and people who have sympathies for government. But the point I need to emphasize is that sometimes all of us lose our temper. But this is not the way to resolve this problem. Again, I'm saying that the doctors, if they to what they are saying, then they should seek the redress according to the institutions that have been built. If we all, after a short interruption, institutions get fed up, get angry, and say, no, it's not functioning, that not helping this problem. And the president has emphasized one time and again, let the law follow its course.
Okay, briefly, before I let you go,
strong institutions.
Before I let you go briefly, how is government going to ensure that, or your ministry, that this doesn't happen again? Of course, compulsory arbitration is going on, but after this, how do we ensure that doctors do not, or health workers, or people in the essential services do not go on strike again?
Well, as I indicated to you, and we do everything to enable the organizations and institutions that must do what they should do. Indeed, part of the complaint that the doctors gave was that they sufficient mandate. At no time was there the mandate any less given by government or whatever. We are managing a national situation, national economy. So demands may be made, but the reality on the ground and the national economy demands will also be taken at this. But I want to assure you that if individuals within any organization or institution are seen to be sabotaging the efforts of other people. This must be, the such people must be held responsible and pointed out. But if you overgeneralize, for instance, the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission have done a very wonderful job migrating over 80% of the public sector workers to the single spine. It is equity and fairness, another segment of the same public sector, and there is a problem. You can generalize and say they are the cause.
All right. Yeah. Okay, we thank you so much for being with us tonight on this program, Minister of Health.
Thank you very much also for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Joseph Yirachiri. Thank you so much. Well, so the doctor's statement said, among other things today, that the strike was suspended because of appeals from the public and the flats in Accra today. But rather, the laws on labor and strike probably compare the GMA to suspended strike. Well, so is that actually the case? Let's speak to labor consultant,
all
Mr.
Right.
Gami. Mr. Gami, good evening. Welcome to Radio Ghana tonight. The doctor's...
You'll be surprised that I guess enjoying my birthday here.
Oh, happy birthday to you. You didn't invite me.
Thank you.
You didn't invite me.
And I'm with my noble students, not great people like you. It's like, yes, you are too big for us, so
I've
afforded to bring you.
I would have loved to celebrate and your birthday with you and just sing for you. Anyway, happy birthday. By the way, how old are you?
I'm 2.
Happy birthday. Congratulations.
Thank you. God bless you.
Amen. So the doctors are back to work. What do you think, or what do you suspect could be the reason? They say people have called on them too.
I'm happy I'm back to work. But
Mr. Gama, it looks like the volume of your on your radio is set this
time. By all means.
Yeah.
But this bitter lesson for Ghanaians to go through is too painful, but it's better than having them to continue to stay out for business. So together with numerous other Ghanaians, we are much happy and satisfied that the Labour Commission has prevailed. The law has prevailed, and the city of Ghana will be seen by worldwide, you know, and hopefully should serve as a lesson to both employers and workers and their various unions who may want to take the law into their own hands and do whatsoever they wish with it. This should not be tolerated in a 21st century.
Should not be tolerated by the institutions you set up, the government, or workers, or, you know, labor.
I, you know, from day one, my consistency, I don't want to have anything to do with government. I'm dealing with employers. This is not a business. When it comes to industrial relations, it's a special field. It's not about people something to eat.
But the employer in this case is the government. The employer in this case is the government.
Yeah, no. Call it the employer. Because government can government go. But the employer, the employees, the workers remain as workers. And they are managed at any given time on behalf of the state by somebody we call government. And that government has got a mouthpiece called today Fair Wages and Salaries Commission as the technical mouthpiece for the state. So as soon as you bring government in, you'll be introducing politics, and then all manner of people jump into it, and it is politics they do with it. I want to avoid it, and I want us to stay focused. This is strong relations. It's a very special field. And it's not meant for novices. It's meant for people who are emotionally matured, people who understand that we are managing the human capital, and we don't have to toy with it at all.
So, Mr. Gami, the compulsory arbitration definitely is the reason why they call it a strike. I'm sure that to be it.
Certainly, if any new introduction or inventions. They are just like what somebody would say, encomiums. The flood is not the issue. The numerous calls started from day one, not 19th day. It's about going to compulsory arbitration. And it's on record that some of us have been consistent from day one that they cannot proceed with compulsory arbitration without calling off the strike. Otherwise, Labour Commission will be dead.
But why did it take so long for compulsory arbitration to take place? 19
that
days.
That is part of the thing people need to know. One, Labour Commission cannot just jump into a compulsory arbitration without the issues not being tabled before Labour Commission. Labour Commission
by whom?
Under Section 138 can be proactive, but they have there's a check on them. So if a complaint is lodged by either the employer or the union, that is DMA, then Labour Commission is seized with authority to invite them to come for the conversation, which they did. And the parties themselves said, look, we are willing to go back and talk and bring you the result. The assumption is that they would have gone back to work normally and have continued with the negotiation as Section 127, Subsection 2 and Subsection 3 and 4 demands on both of them. Unfortunately, they failed to yield to that understanding. Then now they submitted the issues. Once the issues are confirmed by Labour Commission, it means it's out of their hands. And now Labour Commission will have to instruct. They have come out with the ground rules, or if you like, rules of engagement. And part of the rules of engagement will be that you cannot continue to be on strike while the arbitration process continues. That's how it's supposed to be. So they have no choice.
But briefly, how do we prevent this from happening in the future?
Two areas. One, anybody who may serve as a consultant to any employer or union, or if you are a lawyer to a company or a union, be bold enough. Let us learn to have the presence of the state and the people therein in our mind as a priority, so that we don't allow people to be in error and expect us to clap for them in their error. So whosoever, starting with me, myself, number one, if you are advising people, make sure you tell them their honest position first. If they say they will not take it, take your hands off it so that you don't become a victim of circumstances. So I think that it's important that people should learn this lesson. We should stay focused with the law, and everybody should learn to respect the views of others and people who are experts in this field. They should learn to listen to them and take advice. Everybody is good in his field. And therefore, listen to other people and let's humble ourselves. That's all.
But what is the probability of success with this compulsory arbitration?
100% plus.
Thank you.
It will never fail, because the commissioners are not going to take sides with anybody. They are going to simply listen to the two sides, submit their positions, because this is not a position, it's not an interest-based thing. So they will submit their positions, they will submit evidence to back their positions. The commission, having allowed them to cross-examine each other, they will be on oath. And when they finish cross-examination and everybody is satisfied, go. They will prepare now the report, and their submission or the award that they will give will be final and binding on both of them. If you are not satisfied, you can only appeal to appeals court under Section 134 of the Labour Act, only on point of law, not the merit of the case per se.
So, Mr. Gamu, thank you so much. And the birthday cake is big enough. You can send us a piece of it. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome.
And have a good night, Mr. Austin Gamu. It's a Labour consultant. You're listening to Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra, where Dr. Michael Kwesa is a lecturer at the Institute of African Studies at the University of Ghana and a policy researcher. He also observed the doctor's actions and at close range, but he was particularly not happy with the strike. Let's see what he makes of the decision by the doctors to suspend the strike. Dr. Kwesa, good evening. Welcome to Behind the News. I'm sure that you are relieved now.
Sure, I mean, I like any other Ghanaian who has followed this issue quite closely and have been concerned about the issue as it has unfolded in our country over the last couple of weeks. I am relieved, not only for myself, but for the hundreds of thousands of Ghanaians who, for this ill advice industrial action, have suffered one way or the other. So I think it's a welcome news that finally reason is beginning to prevail and the doctors are going back to work.
You may not be happy with the strike, but I'm sure you believe they had a case.
No, and I have said that several times on many of our media platforms. I have said that on TV3, I've said that on a number of our radio stations, that look, there is a substantive case, there is a genuine case, but we need to separate the issues from the processes and the procedure that are used in resolving these issues. And I think this has been articulated over and over and over again. We are no longer living in the 1970s or the 1980s. We do have a labor law. We have a labor regime in this country. And the regime clearly spells out the rules of engagement, the rules, the processes that are required of every labor union in this country as far as resolving disputes are concerned. And no one individual or no group of people are above those particular rules. We elect parliament to make rules for us. And in this country, parliamentary rules or the rules made by parliament oftentimes are scrutinized by civil society groups of which these unions are members. So on what basis would they all of a sudden go outside of the rules and basically jump the gun? And I think that going forward, what we should be advising people to do, especially the Labour Commission, is don't sit down and only deal with disputes. Educate the public on the rules, the laws, the regulations, and the regimes that govern labor relations in this country.
And so, going forward, what do you think we should do?
Well, I think going forward, one of the fundamental things that we should be doing is engaging in a series of public education on how these rules operate, how we can get around these issues or any other labor market related issues that emerge without necessarily having to cripple any public services, be it in the area of education, be it in the area of healthcare, be it in the area of whatever services that are provided. We need all this expertise to be able to run the country effectively. And in particular, as I have argued on other platforms, I think doctors need to be very, very circumspect, especially on this issue, because unlike lawyers and other professions in this country where people pay out of their pocket within a certain range of statutory subsidy of education, doctors tend to be given this huge subsidy and capital investment from the very beginning. And so for them, some amount of consumption has taken place all through their training processes. And so fighting for income, yes, is good, there is a case, but one needs to measure the amount of consumption that has taken place over the years within the period of training with whatever levels of income the state is paying them right now. And I think we need to really transcend individual and personal interests. We need to look at the collective interests of this country. And by looking at that, we might be able to avoid some of these episodes.
Dr. Pesan, we thank you very much for talking to us tonight on Radio Ghana, and you have a good night. Dr. Michael Pesan is a lecturer at the Institute of African Studies at the University of Ghana. You're listening to Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra. Were you affected by the floods that hit Accra in its environs last night, where hundreds of people have had their homes flooded and properties destroyed, or some have lost their lives? This is not the first time the capital city has suffered from such disaster. Accra is prone to perennial floods, and yet no permanent solution has been found to the problem. The best we often do is to lament on the losses and resort to ad hoc measures. But tonight, with me in the studio is an ADMU official in charge of research and monitoring, Dr. Kingsford Asamoah. But first of all, we would like to speak to the Meteorological Services Agency whether Accra is going to experience some more rains. Amos Nah is the officer in charge of the Kotoka International Airport Meteor Office. Good evening to you, Mr. Nah, and welcome to Radio Ghana. Was the Meteor Service able to detect these floods before last night, the rain especially?
Yeah, thank you very much. Last night, well, we noticed there was going to be rain, so our forecast indicated that we're going to have scattered activities over the coastal areas and the forest belt. Well, what we could actually not put our finger on was the intensity of the rain.
Why so? Why were you not able to tell how intense the rains were going to be?
Yeah, it is always very difficult. Let me just put that round very bluntly. It is very difficult to predict that we're going to have, say, 100 millimeters of rain as occurred, 120 or a particular figure at a particular point. What is easier to forecast is the spatial distribution of rain. Say, over the coastal areas, over the forest areas, you're going to have this type of situation. Sometimes it's also possible to forecast whether the rain was going to be moderate or is going to be intense. But the actual intensity is what we are not able to forecast. So we don't have the capacity for that.
So what kind of warning did you put? I'm sorry, sir.
That is possible when you have a radar. Because the radar is able to tell exactly how much water you have in a particular system.
So you do not have the radar?
No. But the Honorable Minister is doing all everything possible so that possibly by the end of the year we could have one. I think...
Minister of which ministry?
Sorry?
Which minister are you referring to?
Honorable Minister of Communication.
Okay.
Yes, it needs a lot of commendation, especially this government, that they have released so much money so that we could get a radar. So that is a problem with...
So which kind of warning did you give out, send up last night?
No, last night, you know that we give 24-hour forecast.
Yes.
Which the day. One for the day, then one for the night, to the following morning. That one came out. But as I said, what we were not able to point out was that it was going to rain for 4 hours and that there was going to be flooding. That's difficult to predict.
Your warnings are mostly on television in the evening. Why do you not give 24-hour warnings, you know, or 12-hour warnings to radio stations to announce?
Now, what I'm saying is that if this depends also on the system. If we have a moving system, say we have a rain system moving east to west, like the big rainstorms, those ones are very easy to detect, and they are very easy to be predicted. And in that case, you could confidently give a weather warning. But the system we had yesterday was such that there are some systems we call mesoscale systems, or in situ. It will just develop within a short period. Then it will be sitting at a particular area, this time over the Accra area, extended to the central region and some parts of the western region. It doesn't appear very big, just a small system. Because it is very persistent over the time, it will just be giving so much rain. So it is something you might not be very much aware, you can not put your finger on it, but it was going to produce so much rain within a particular time. So that is a problem, and it's one of the challenges of prediction in the tropics. Now, if you contact meteorologists over Africa, they will tell you about this challenge. Focusing in the tropics is always a problem because we have a lot of energy and we have different types of systems affecting us. Some we can even easily slip through the mesh so that you don't even be able to detect it. They form within a short time, and that is it.
But could it also be that the Nature Service Agency lacks a lot of equipment, maybe vital equipment that could help you forecast more easily?
For equipment, we need a lot of equipment. We need a lot of equipment. We need a lot. That much, I would say that we need a lot of equipment.
But in spite of that, I'm sure you have an idea about the length of time you're going to experience rains this year.
Yes.
For the remainder of the year.
Of course. With the rainy season, you know, the minor season is in September, October for the south. But for the north, from August, September, and October, it is still the rainy season. That's a single peak. But for the south, we have the minor season, then you have the major season. But we should also not forget that sometimes the minor season performs than the major season. So like what happened, where in October you could have rain. Sometimes even in December, which is supposed to be a dry season, we'll still have some rain. So the intensity we had yesterday was what was very rare. But actually, we have not ruled out the possibility of rain at this time of the year. Now, in year 2006, I remember that the minor season was very poor for the south, and there was very little rain in the Volta Dam. So I remember VRIA contacting the department to know how it was going to be in the minor season. And last year, all the water that we had in the Volta Dam to use following the next rainy season, all precipitated in September and October. It was so much, it was better than the minor season.
All right, so Mr. Na,
this type of things actually okay. But the intensity, as I said, is okay. Where we have a problem.
Briefly, what kind of advice would you have for the public? By the way,
you are scarcely audible. Can you speak a bit louder?
I want to find out from you what the forecast for the next 24 hours is going to be.
Well, there's 24 hours. In fact, first let me say that there was some rumor that we have predicted some storm or rain occurring, which will even be worse off than what happened. It was going to last for 3 hours. 3 days. We didn't know the source of that rumor, and it is not true. We had actually not given such forecast. So I don't know exactly where it originated. Possibly, maybe in the morning when the Honorable Minister announced that there will be no school for the school children. I believe that possibly somebody must have added.
So what exactly is the forecast for the next 24 hours?
The forecast for the next 24 hours, well, we were expecting just some few activities in the middle of the Volta areas, not very much, except for cloudiness with some sunshine in the next 24 hours.
Any advice for Ghanaians in general, and particularly farmers?
Well, farmers, I think the farming season is getting over. So for farmers, anybody who takes a day farming will do so. If the person wants to rely on the rain, then the person is going to take a risk. Those who are farming along the river banks, they could go on with irrigation. The other advice I have is that, you see, even if there is no forecast, we have history in this country to tell us, to make us aware of the flooding situation. From 1988, I've been coming on air, radio and TV, and what I've always been speaking about, and not me alone, with my colleagues, is that we have to take particular attention to our drainage system, the setting of choke gutters, building on waterways. We have said this often and often and often. That is what is taking a toll on us. So I will say that the policy makers, those who enforce policy and the rest, they must ensure that these things are, even if we don't have, have a forecast division in this country, history alone must be able to tell us that there are flood-prone areas in this country, and we have to make sure that we take every necessary precaution to avoid all these situations.
All right, Mr. Na.
So the loss of life and property, will be avoided.
Thank you so much, Mr. Na. Thank you very much for talking to us tonight, and you have a good night. Meteorologist Amos Na of the Meteorological Services Agency. He's in charge of the Kutoka International Airport Office of the Meteorological Services Agency. So with me in the studio is Dr. Kingsford Asamoa, who is the head of research of NADMO. Dr. Asamoa, welcome to Radio Ghana Studios tonight. So,
thank you very much.
How was the day like? You look dressed for action.
Thank you very much. Look, we've been at it since morning, and we're still at it, and we'll continue until we find a very good solution.
What have you been doing?
Yes, before I go into trying to answer that, I want to take this opportunity to, on behalf of NADMO and, you know, the whole populace, to thank the president, you know, for joining NADMO during the response phase. To sympathize with the victims of the flood. And once again, I want to emphasize that we sympathize with all the victims, especially to the 9 families of the people who, you know, faced their untimely death.
So 9 people died.
Yes. And I wish to say that they should all the affected victims should maintain their poise and fortitude, because NADMO is with them and will be with them until we find amicable solution to this problem.
So what have you been doing?
Basically, for the day, the president, this is the response phase. Usually, we have the pre-crisis and the response phase. And so for this response phase, what we have been doing is to visit these areas and to sympathize with them, to encourage them, to give them hope. And then shortly after that, we have started the assessment. So we've been to about 32 communities in all. The president joined us to Achimota. He joined us to Alajo. He joined us to Circle and to Domi. And aside of these areas I've mentioned, there are other areas that we've been going to help the people to do first to try to rescue those who are in the waters and to also to do the assessment.
Do you rely on the Metro service to preempt problems, you know, floods, and so get ready for what's likely to happen?
Yes, yes, you're right. The Metro services largely helps us during the early warning. And so basically, yes, that's what we do.
But talking about the floods, how devastating was it?
So I was just quoting the number of communities that are affected. He mentioned that it's 100 millimeters of rain. Basically, some of us think that it is influenced by climate change, you know, some of these things. And the enormity of it tells the number of communities that are affected, because we have 32 of them, and I can count from Ablingpe, Achimota, Adabraka, Adenta, Afunya, Abuba, Alajo, Ashalibuti, and it goes on and on.
All these places were flooded.
Yes.
But not every place was flooded. So that tells you that even though the rains were intense, and that could be attributed to climate change, there were other factors that contributed to the flooding.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, we wouldn't lose sight of the fact that people are building in waterways. We wouldn't lose sight of the fact that people are throwing garbage into the drainage system that is choking it and causing some of these floods.
That's not Mundu areas where people have built on waterways.
Yes, NADMU do know areas where people have built in waterways.
Which areas?
And AMA also knows some of these areas. I'm not going to go into
because
detail.
Because you are into disaster management.
Yes, yes.
When disaster strikes, you are going to be called upon. So
yes,
if
right.
You know where there are houses on waterways, I'm sure that the best thing to do is to you know, cooperate with the EMA or to speak to the EMA or the assemblies concerned nationwide to see to solving that problem.
Definitely, definitely. All these areas that I was listening to you, most of them are, you know, culprits of building in waterways and then, you know, choking the gutters. So basically, that is the vulnerability that exacerbates this kind of flooding. And so if you ask me which areas, of course, looking at the list that we are presenting, almost all of these areas, some of them have buildings and waterways.
So, again, on the extent of damage, did you see houses collapse, people's houses collapsed, shops? Can you give us a graphic picture of what you saw?
Well, yes, we have some information as of now regarding the extent of the damage. I think that we need to have a little more detailed information to be able to pass that on, because we have to do a more thorough assessment of those areas. Right now, what we are doing is basically to look at those areas in terms of trying to comfort them, trying to...
Have some people been made homeless?
Yes, Odona area, for instance, you know, there are some of the people whose houses have been completely devastated to the extent that would have to give them mattresses to sleep on, and also
mattresses to sleep on in in rooms.
No, yeah, we are trying to get tents and all of that so that we can get some of these people.
So there are quite a number of people who are homeless now.
Not quite a number of them, but a sizable number within Odona area. You know, where some of their places have been flooded to the extent that they cannot.
So apart from blankets, how do you call it, mattresses, what other, what other kinds of help are you giving them or assistance?
Well, basically, we are looking at our relief covers food, shelter, and clothing. So for food, we give some of them rice and oil. It depends on the demand according to our assessment. Then for shelter, like I mentioned earlier on, we we give them blankets and mattresses, and then for clothing, usually used clothing, anything that they can go by in the interim.
The doctors called off their strike about 4 hours or so ago, but for a larger part of the day, they were on strike. How were you able to handle the situation with hospitals, you know, without doctors?
Well, that's a very unfortunate situation. I'm glad that the situation has been resolved, but we were just keeping our fingers crossed for the period that nothing, you know, bad really happens.
So what is the plan for the next, you know, few days? What are you going to be doing tomorrow and tomorrow next then?
Yeah, we have formed teams that will be going to the various areas, and they will be making a more thorough assessment so that we are able to do the distribution of items. So the teams will go from our Christian Village, Kwashibu, Odona, Adenta, Achimota Chapel, Kasua, Sotum, Malam, and other areas.
That is to say that you are not able to cover all areas today?
No, we for today, you know, when people are affected with such a, you know, situation, you usually want to excuse them a little bit. So what we are doing is we are doing the registration as of now.
Registration of what?
Excuse me?
Registration of what?
Of the affected
victims.
Yes. And the covering the items that they have lost and all that.
Now, is not more able to tell exactly, you know, apart from people building in waterways, are there other attitudinal problems?
Yeah, basically, when people outside of building in waterways, people are not going by the building codes and stuff like that. So some of those things also go to hurt.
Okay, I'll come back to you, Dr. Asamoah. I'll come back to you. Let's speak now to the Minister of Local Government and Rural Development, Mr. Samuel Fosampofo. Good evening to you, Mr. Fosampofo, and you're welcome to Radio Ghana tonight. Now, have you had reports from across the country concerning, I mean, the assemblies in all over the country? How are the floods?
Well, I think so far the flood situation is mainly in the Accra metropolitan area. We haven't had any report of any major flooding situation outside this metropolis, at least for now.
Now, the challenge that we have has to do with, you know, people's attitude, building waterways, choked drains and all that. How are the assemblies coping with these problems? Normally, we talk about them when we have a challenge like this.
Well, it is a normal activity of the assemblies. The assemblies, these assemblies are the planning authority, and for that matter, are charged with the responsibility of ensuring that there is proper spatial planning, development of structures, and so on and so forth. And so the responsibility of the assembly is to ensure that everybody who wants to develop on any piece of land within the jurisdiction of that assembly goes through a process. And the process is first and foremost to apply to the assembly of your intention to do a development. Then the assembly will assess the kind of development that you want to do, the area you want to do it, and to check whether it is suitable for that development to take place in that area. When this is done, then the application is sent to the Statutory Planning Committee, which will meet. And on the Statutory Planning Committee, we have key agencies like Water Company Limited, Electricity Company Limited of Ghana. You have the district engineers, building inspectors, and all key stakeholders in the belt industry. I mean, all of them are supposed to be there to assist the assembly to take the decision as to approve your development permit or not. And so before this development permit could be approved, the electricity will have to check whether the place that you are going to build is possible to extend electricity to the place. Unfortunately, a lot of people have been ignoring this laid down requirement, and they go in there and develop the structure. Sometimes when they realize that it is waterways or something, they develop it over the weekend, or they look at a long holiday, sometime when there is holiday or Friday, and then, you know, it will take about 4 or 5 days before work resumes. By the time you come in, they have started from foundation and they are almost reaching lintel level. And sometimes, because of the sheer volumes of work, the assembly inspectors and others are unable to track immediately these developers, and by the time they realize they must have reached an advanced stage. Today, I went round of the metro executive for Tema, and we went through areas that where they have even put the stop work, red the stop work by order there. They still continue to develop, and I have authorized that by tomorrow morning I want to see some demolition taking place, because under the law, once you flout this order and you develop without permit, the assembly has every legal right to demolish, and then the developer is surcharged with the cost of demolition. So I have directed that some structures be demolished by tomorrow, because they have failed to pull this laid down.
So anytime that we have disasters like this, do you blame the assemblies for not enforcing their own bylaws?
Well, I think that assemblies will have to take some blame, because you see, for instance, if you go to a place and you've gone to identify that somebody is doing an illegal development, and you write stop work, and then you give a date that by 18/5/2011 stop work, and we are in 18/5, meaning around May, June, and then we are in October, and the person is still developing, then the assembly ought to take the blame. And I have said that from today we are going to sanction recalcitrant officials who will go and condone and connive with developers, because we cannot blame the developers alone. Sometimes the developers are desperate to put something somewhere, but it is the responsibility of the assembly to say, hey, why are we going to put this and will cause a problem in future. This evening, when we went to rounds, there was somebody who saw a church. They are developing a church building. They are putting up whether it's a mission house or something. It is almost sitting in the middle of a storm drain, and the whole church building is inundated with water. And they have been given indication to stop work, and they have not stopped work.
And that's
that the assembly ought to take action immediately. But I agree with you that the assembly ought to have teeth to bite. The assembly officials who are responsible to monitor and ensure the enforcement of the assembly's building regulations and codes ought to be held accountable any time that they also fall foul of the law by not ensuring that they strictly adhere to why they have been employed to what they have been employed to do.
And I'm sure such sanctions will also extend to the MCs and DCEs. And not
they are the chairman. They are the chairman of the strategic planning committee. In fact, before you can be given the green light to develop, it will have to pass through the municipal, metro, or district executive, because he's the chairman of the statutory planning committee. And so the buck stops with them. And really, we are not going to spare them if they supervise this kind of situation any longer.
When are we going to start seeing drains that are covered in the capital? There's hardly any drain in Accra that is covered.
Well, that is a question for the hydrology department to take, because in fact they normally undertake construction of these storm drains. There are some other secondary drains and others which can be covered, but sometimes because of the way we litter the environment, sometimes when you also completely cover the drains and people tend to dump refuse indiscriminately. Anytime it rains and the big drains which are covered just through, it is very, very difficult to dislodge them. That is why, because of the way we go about things, we prefer some of the open drains, because at the end of the day, dislodging the refuse from it is not as difficult as when these things are embedded in an enclosed drain, and taking them off is extremely difficult. I remember when I was a regional minister in Kofurudia, and we undertook a similar clean-up exercise. We have to call the fire service, we have to call PWD to bring us equipment to chip off some of the covered drains in order to remove the top before we could even do any work with him. And so it's a very difficult situation. And for now, all of us will have to put our heads together to see what kind of you know, best practice we can put in place to ameliorate the situation we find ourselves in.
All right, Mr. Fusampafo, we thank you very much for being with us tonight on Radio Ghana. Have a good night.
You're most welcome.
Samuel Fusampafo is the Minister of Local Government and Rural Development. We'll be speaking to the MHA executive on this issue tomorrow on this program. Tonight we are not able to reach him, but briefly to you, Dr. Samwa, before we let you go, I'm sure that I'm sure that NADMO has some challenges in dealing with disasters like this. Can you share some with us?
Well, basically, the minister did touched on some of the difficulties that even AMA and some of the institutions that have to enforce have. And one of the key areas that I think NADMO has an issue is the area of enforcement. So what we are doing right now is...
Enforcement of what?
I mean, basically, when people build in waterways, like you're saying, what do you do? Do you have the clout to demolish or stuff like that? And so what we are doing is we're trying to review the Act 517 of 1996 that establishes NADMO to put in more clout, so we are able to join hands with the other enforcement agencies to do likewise. So are we hoping that with enforcement at its peak?
But the enforcement, does that lie, you know, within the powers of NADMO to enforce any rule?
Well, that's what I just said, that given the act that we have currently, we are not able. We only work in collaboration with enforcement agencies on that. But we are hoping that we would be able to review the Act 517 to the extent that we would also have the clout to enforce.
So dealing with disasters, flood disasters, you know, especially in Accra, what does that lead the way forward?
Well, disaster management generally, and I have to talk about this a little bit just to explain what we are doing. You know, it's basically looking at doing a risk assessment, which is knowing the vulnerabilities and the capacities, and then trying to reduce the vulnerabilities and then increase our capacity. So basically, that's what we're doing, and it is a process of assessing and reassessing and then responding to disaster.
But you know, we are very vulnerable when it comes to flood.
Yes, yeah, some of the areas that we have talked about. Yes, you know, given the sprawl of Accra, I mean, the growth of Accra, population is growing, the drainage system is really hard, you know, put to test, and it needs improvement. And then you have people, choking the gutters, and you have people building in ways that they don't have to. So that aggravates the situation that already...
So we keep talking about people's attitude and all that. Does NADMO have any educational outfit that goes around talking to people to choke the gutters and all that? Is that also within your...
Yes, NADMO has, we've been doing a lot of... We have the peer section that goes... That's a lot of education. This program...
Where does that kind of education take place? Where I've never seen any van belongs to NADMO. Do you have vans that go around to educate the people?
Yeah, we have a... The thing about NADMO that you need to understand is that NADMO doesn't work in isolation. We work with all other institutions.
Like? ISD?
Yes.
Commission Service Department?
And not only that, we have planning committees that are also from various institutions that also help. We also have national platform. The national platform constitutes... or is comprising of almost all people from all walks of life.
And why is it that we hear about NADMO only when there's a disaster?
I don't know about that, but seriously, NADMO is an everyday thing. We our work starts from it's 24-hour work that we do. So I'm surprised that you, in particular, haven't heard of NADMO. You know,
no, we know there's NADMO,
yeah.
But the kind of educational programs we're expecting to hear is not only when there is a flood or there are fires or whatever. We want to hear of NADMO all the time, the educational programs in the newspapers, on radio, television, all the time. That doesn't seem to be happening.
Yeah, we are doing what we can do, but I hope that with you now also getting on board, you are able to help us to do a lot more, so that at least it will reach further into the areas that it has not reached.
Were you prepared for last night's disaster, even though it was not announced? Nobody could predict.
Yes, I know. some of these things you least expect them, but when they happen, because of the nature of the work, you are always ready.
Ready with everything.
That's right.
So we thank you very much for talking to us tonight, for passing by Dr. Kinswada Somwa, who is head of research at NADMO. Thanks so much. and have a good night.
You're welcome.
You're listening to Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra. Of course, we have lined up Dr. Kojentia Jay, who is from the Expanded Program on Immunization. He's a program manager of the Expanded Program on Immunization. We are trying to reach him. We've not been able to reach him yet, and so we may have to do that story tomorrow. But do know that the National Polio Immunization Exercise will start throughout the country tomorrow. Here are some of your text messages. You're listening to Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. This one from Awal in Tamale. If Ghanaians can survive a week or two or three without doctors, then their services are not as much necessary. So he says to all patriotic citizens, I say, ni tumapam. I believe I was able to read that well. What compensation will the doctors give to those who have died due to their strike? Posterity will not forgive them. Andrew Manga in Boku says, so it's high time Ghanaians faced the facts. All buildings along waterways should be pulled down. Karim Sehwi Akatisu. Abraham, the inhabitants of Accra must help solve the floods problem by obeying the sanitation laws. J.K. Womampong. And then Said Ingaru, had it been written that the fear of God is the beginning of riches, the doctors would not have gone on strike in the first place. They would take their salary this month, but can they bring back the dead? AMA and chiefs should stop selling lands on waterways. Gilbert in Sunyai sentence that doctors did not call off the strike because of people's plea, but due to this month's salary, since their conscience tells them that they did not work for it, and people's death as well. Logika Jamasi. We thank our doctors for returning to work. AU Farouk in Tamale says, let's allow our doctors and government to find a lasting solution to their differences. Nursing from Bali. And this one from Ben Nkofodia, he says, the issue regarding the doctors should be resolved with dispatch as they have called off the strike. Condolences to those who lost their lives due to the floods, and welcome back, doctors, from your strike. Karim Barnard Sabari, the loss of lives through floods is regrettable. The floods should send warning signals to those who have built on waterways. Ninkaps Michael Pandai, let our laws on building permits be made to work. Salia Wild West. And that's it for tonight's edition of Behind the News, which came to you live from Broadcasting House in Accra. This program is produced by Kingsley Obinchwe, Edmond Tete, Christopher Siedu, and Wright Agama. Tonight, the technical production was done by Armstrong Agbewonu. My name is Abraham Asari. Have a flawless night.